So here we are into the season of Easter in many ways, and we're beginning it with a very, in some ways, an odd place to begin, and that's in our gospel lesson with the famous story of Thomas, the twin who doubted. I understand doubting twins in a way that perhaps other people don't, although it's completely irrelevant to the story, but there you have it anyway. I like this story. I like this part of John for all kinds of reasons. And the first reason, perhaps, is what the sermon title is all about. We all doubt, don't we? There is a class of people who don't doubt. They tend to be put in places where they can't hurt themselves, because if you have no doubts whatsoever, you're suffering from some kind of a mental illness. More or less the way it goes. I mean, doubt is part of what it means to be human and to be healthy. People with no doubts are those kind of people that you simply cannot convince, even in the midst of, or even in the face of overwhelming evidence. Heather and I have made use of, well, it's a joke more than anything else, and I think I may have even told it here before, about a psychotic who was locked up. That he wouldn't hurt himself because he was under the impression he was dead and couldn't be convinced otherwise. And so they tried all kinds of things, and so a new psychiatrist came in and met with him and said, well, you say you're dead, then how are we talking? And so the person talked about how ghosts sometimes talk and how their sounds come from dead people and all kinds of things. And so the psychiatrist went through a number of different things and asked him, you know, what about this and what about that? Do these apply to dead people? And the answer was always yes. And he finally said, well, what about bleeding? Do dead people bleed? The person said, no, they don't. So the psychiatrist, in a moment of triumph, took out a small knife, grabbed the man's hand, stabbed him in the hand, and said, there, what do you think of that? The man said, well, look at that. Dead people do bleed. Steadfast belief does not necessarily go with good mental health or a lot of other things. We all doubt. And it's tempting to just sort of end it there, saying we all have doubts, live with it. But of course, that's not what we're looking for. Because what do we do with these doubts? There's a strong tendency within us to look down on doubts, our own and other people's, and say that there's something wrong with us, that particularly in matters of faith, if we have any doubts, it means we don't have any faith at all. It means that we don't really believe. It means that we've never actually had an authentic encounter with the risen Christ. And that's being way too hard on ourselves and others. And when we look at the gospel reading, there's all kinds of good things here for us. But the one that does the best for me, or is the most comforting or the most useful for me, is Jesus' response to Thomas. Because Jesus has met some of his disciples, and these disciples have, of course, told everyone that they know, including Thomas, who wasn't there. And Thomas says, well, unless I see the nail marks in his hands and put my finger where the nails were and put my hand into his side, I will not believe. From our perspective, we occasionally look at Thomas and we sort of look down on Thomas. But really, that's a pretty rational response when somebody tells you that somebody who was dead isn't dead anymore. It's not unreasonable for someone to say, well, until I shake hands with them, I'm just not going to believe it. And so then a week later, Thomas is with them, and we'll even skip over the part that though the doors were locked, Jesus just came in, proving that this resurrected body is something more than what we're used to, but it's still a body. Says, peace be with him. And then he goes to Thomas and says, put your finger here, reach out your hand, stop doubting and believe. I've probably written this in every Bible I've ever had, or something similar to it. There's no condemnation in Jesus here. That's one of the most comforting parts I take from this, is that Jesus, who appears to Thomas, does not say, Thomas, you ninny, here I am. He doesn't say, Thomas, what's wrong with you? I told you I was coming back from the dead. Why wouldn't you believe that? He doesn't say anything of the kind. There's no way you can read this in any way that makes Jesus point his finger at Thomas and say there's something wrong with you. What we see is we see Jesus reaching out to people where they are yet again, saying, Thomas, this is what you need. Here you go. Now, stop doubting and believe. And of course, Thomas does. How could he not? And then Jesus says, because you have seen me, you have believed. Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. And that's us. That's not to say that some people haven't been given a miraculous vision of the person of Jesus. It has happened. Well, it happened to Paul, if nothing else. He was given a miraculous vision on the road to Damascus. But for the vast majority of us, we are not going to have that kind of miraculous, mystical encounter with the risen Lord, the way that some people do. We haven't seen, and yet we believe. But Thomas no doubt believed before then. He believed in Jesus, believed who he was. He was one of his disciples, and he, in a sense, lost that belief when Jesus died, which, once again, is not unreasonable. And it came back. So for us who haven't had that same kind of interaction with Jesus, it shouldn't surprise us that there are times that we are going to have doubts. If Thomas could have doubts, and we don't know how long Thomas was with Jesus, whether it was just a few years or whether he'd known him from a child. I don't think he was, but I don't think he was a childhood friend, but he might have been. But if Thomas could have those kind of difficulties, why do we think that we should somehow be immune? Because we're not. I have never talked to anyone who hasn't had doubts about things they know. Not just about spiritual things. You talk to anyone who's been married for a long period of time, and they will tell you that at least once, and maybe only once, they had some doubts. Well, they may have doubted that they married the right person. They're more likely have doubted that the other person married the right person, because our doubts are often directed towards us. Does that mean that they just walked away from being married and said, well, it never really happened? Of course not. We have doubts that our parents love us. We have doubts that our children love us. We have doubts that we love our children. Because it's tough to be in relationships, and it's tough not to take things personally that aren't intended so, and it's tough not to take in some ways the easiest way out and just say, well, I don't think that ever really happened when things are hard. That's just part of the human condition, that we have doubts. What makes these relationships still work and what makes all of these things still work is what we do with the doubt. And the worst thing we can do is pretend that it's not there at all. Pretending you don't have doubts just doesn't work. It's like a cat trying to hide the carpet by lying on it. It's beyond the cat's ability. We have to admit the fact that we have doubts. Maybe not very often. Maybe hardly ever at all. But we're going to have doubts about what we believe. We're going to have doubts about all kinds of things, about our own abilities. There are times when I'm getting ready to preach and I think, why do these people listen to me? What on earth do I have to say to anyone, let alone these people who have heard me lots of times? Now, I can pretend that doesn't happen, and I can resolutely ignore it, but what good does that do other than just give that doubt some fuel? When that happens, and it does, I tell myself that it's not so much that I'm special, it's this is what God has asked me to do in this community of faith. This is the role I play. And this is how I exercise my spiritual gifts. And the Holy Spirit is part of this process. It's not just me. And I'm going to step into the pulpit and I'm going to preach because that's God's call upon me, in the same way that you all have different kinds of calls that God's put upon. And some weeks it's going to be better than others. Very rarely it'll be extraordinary. Very rarely it'll be terrible. Most of the time it'll be what we need, because the Holy Spirit is gracious to all of us and works through people who aren't sure they belong where they are. And I go through all of those processes and I say, well, I am where I should be. And I put that doubt behind me. But I can't put it behind me till I identify it for what it is. It's easy for us to look at Thomas and say, oh, you should have just believed your friends. But how often have we disbelieved our friends? How often have we've been told something that we said, oh, I'll believe it when I see it. There's nothing wrong with that. That doesn't make us bad people. It doesn't mean that we're untrustworthy or unvaluable friends, or that we don't value our friends. It means that for all of us, we have different thresholds of what it takes for us to believe. I think most of us would like an encounter with the risen Christ in a way that was just undeniable. I think that would help us. But when we look at our life experience, when we look at this passage where Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed, does that mean we've never seen anything? We haven't seen the risen Christ in a corporeal form. But all of us have seen lives dramatically transformed through an encounter with Jesus. Often it's our own life. We look at ourselves and we look at the people around us and we look at church history and we read stories and biographies and all of these things, and we see people whose lives have been changed in ways that only make sense if Jesus is alive. That only makes sense if everything that Jesus said about himself was true. We address any doubts we might have, like Thomas. Any doubts that, well, did Jesus really come back from the dead? Are those things that are promised in the Bible, are they real? Well, we look around and we see those authentic transformations that nothing else explains. Every so often, any of us who have any connection with people who are struggling to believe or don't believe, and they'll talk about how there's no evidence for all kinds of things out of the Bible, and just think, well, what do you mean by evidence? Where's the evidence that somebody loves you? Where's the evidence of loyalty? Well, those evidences are seen in how people behave. And the fact that you can sometimes explain people's behavior in ways that leave love or loyalty out of it doesn't change the fundamental reality of love. You can say that your spouse loves you because it's an economic arrangement that's good for them. It's not really love, it's just self-care. Well, you can tell me that till you're blue in the face about my relationship with Heather, and I'm still not going to believe you. You're taking the same evidence and reshaping it, reinterpreting, and that's okay. You're welcome to do that. But as far as I'm concerned, and as far as most people are concerned, the only reason why Heather puts up with me at particular times is because she loves me. No paycheck would put up with what I can be like, because I'm a human being, just like all of us. We admit our doubts because they're going to happen no matter what. And we admit our doubts and we take them to where they can be answered, and we are open to the possibility of having our doubts addressed, because that's what we also see in this passage. Thomas said, this is what it will take for me to believe. Well, when he got it, he said, I believe. You occasionally run into people who are looking for proof of something, and when they get it, they say, well, but I want more, or I want more. And these are people who are not honestly dealing with their doubt. They're looking for a reason to not believe. That's different than doubt. That's not what we're dealing with, or at least not what most of us are dealing with ever. We're dealing with that sudden sense that just strikes many of us at the strangest times, and we think, does the Bible really make sense? Does it really make sense that we go to church every Sunday, that we wake up early on a day off and go to church? These doubts that flash through our mind are just part of being alive, part of being human, part of testing what it is that we think and what we believe and all of that, all of those sorts of things. None of them are wrong, none of them are bad. As long as we're willing to have those doubts addressed. And when those thoughts pop up, why am I going to church? When we remember, oh, that's where I go to meet with these particular people, and where the Holy Spirit meets me in ways where I'm not met any other way. And we go, that's why. That this building is a place where good things happen between us and between us and God. And the doubts dissipate then, because we've addressed them and we've been willing to be convinced. We're all going to doubt. And that's okay. If Jesus isn't going to condemn Thomas for doubting, I don't think we have the right to condemn ourselves, and certainly not anyone else, for those moments of doubt, those moments of, is this real? Is this what I actually think it is? The thing to do is to realize, first of all, that this is part of what it means to be a human being. And second, to be prepared to be convinced. Be open to be convinced. Whatever you're doubting, whether it's about whether someone loves you or not, or whether it's the truths of Jesus that we celebrate in Easter are true, whatever they are, you have to be willing to be convinced. You have to be willing to believe when the evidence is there. And Jesus says, blessed are those who have not seen and yet have believed. He's not saying that these are people who have never seen anything. He's saying these are people who haven't seen his physical body. But we've seen the transformation that comes through a relationship with God through Jesus, empowered by the Holy Spirit in our own lives and in the lives of many people around us. And we may occasionally have doubts about that, but when we look carefully at the evidence that is before our eyes, we too can say, my Lord and my God.